It's 8:17. Good morning. The Snyderville Basin Planning Commission meeting and a special meeting tomorrow night. It starts with an open house at 3:30 to have a look at the proposed Canyons Village Master Plan. Commissioners meeting at the Sheldon Richens Building. On the phone with a preview of the agenda, I have staff planners Tiffany Robinson along with Sean Lewis. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Tiffany, let's begin with you and the Canyons Village Master Plan. According to your staff report, the revised plan affects 9 RC parcels and 2 LV parcels. So are we talking about resort commercial and lower village when we use these letters?
Actually, it's resort core. So that's the main core of the ski area up near the Forum area, Ski Beach, the Sundial, Grand Summit, those larger hotels. That's considered the resort core, and that's prefaced with the RC number. And then, yes, the LV is the lower village area.
Okay, so the RC properties that we're talking about revising, where are those?
So they are, again, they're right in the heart of the core of the village, surrounding the existing Forum area in the existing hotels adjacent to Sundial, Westgate, Grand Summit. And there is a RC parcel that's actually across the Golf Hole 1, which is near... It's near the West Willow Draw area, but it's still considered part of the resort core. But the majority of them are right tucked within the existing development within that the village there.
Okay, so we're talking about 9 of them. Is that how many there are still left to be built on?
Well, there are actually more parcels than that are entitled at this point that are left to be built on in the resort core. However, as part of this proposal, they're looking to move some of the density that's on some of those parcels and put them on some of these parcels that we're talking about today. So, for instance, RC3, RC4, and W36, that are development parcels still that have entitlements, they will no longer be constructed upon or not being proposed to be, and some of that density being moved over some to these other parcels.
So overall, is what we're hearing is lower density after this, this density is redistributed. I think the figure in the packet said the decrease would be more than 131,000 square feet. So this is just from those parcels?
It is. So there's some taken from some of these parcels that are being eliminated, some of the parcels that are still being proposed to be built on. Some of that density would be reduced slightly. So the majority of that 131,000 square feet being reduced will be commercial density. Approximately 90,000 of that will be commercial. There would be about 13,000 multifamily residential square feet of density eliminated, and approximately almost 29,000 of hotel lodging density to be eliminated.
So is this density, are we talking just really at the base of the resort? What about all of the development that is slated to be built near the Red Pine Lodge?
So we're not dealing with anything up in that Red Pine area at this point. This is strictly density within the resort core. All that density that's entitled is still intact. There may be revisions in the future. It may be built as it's anticipated. Nothing is being discussed at this point with the Red Pine. So everything as part of this master plan amendment that we're talking about is strictly within this resort core. And then the lower village, lots 1A and 1B, where we'll see some of the, hopefully in the near future, the employee housing being built in the lower village area, along with enhancing the transportation drop-off areas and things of that nature, and then some small commercial down there as well.
Okay. Is there any talk about another lift from that cabriolet parking lot? Let's put it there. Or is it the cabriolet is it to get to the resort core?
The cabriolet would be it at this point. The only revision to the lift is actually the existing sunrise lift that's there now. As part of this plan, they're looking to move that down the hill slightly to creating more of a ski in, ski out with that particular area. That would be the only revision as far as relocating that. And then obviously hoping to be able to realign that to expand the sunrise lift to access the different areas of the mountain. But as far as from lifts from the base area, the cabriolet would be it to get from the lower village area to the resort core.
All right. So for those who do any day parking, they still would have to wait in line at the cabriolet.
Down at the cabriolet, again, as part of this as well, and it's been anticipated as part of the original master plan that there would be structured parking built in that lower village area, with some of these development parcels now being built upon and taken with this density, that structure will need to be built to replace that existing parking. But, yes, there would be lines down in that cabriolet area. And obviously, hopefully, some enhanced transportation with some circulator buses going around that would also help relieve some of that traffic or folks trying to get to the resort core from that lower village area.
Yeah. So is there going to be a decrease in the number of parking spots there?
There will be, obviously, as right now there's, especially in the resort core, some of the development parcels are currently being utilized as surface parking areas, and obviously when structures are built, that's going to go away. Some of that parking will be absorbed within the developments, in the underground parking structures there, but a lot of that is going to have to be replaced in other areas, like the parking structure and other remote locations. But yes, some of that will be being reduced and replaced other places.
So the revisions would also increase some building heights or change the definition of heights, and it looks like there's some controversy here. What are the details?
Well, just certainly the biggest change here, this really is an amendment to the land use and zoning chart specific to modifying densities, reallocating them to different parcels, and obviously taking a look at the height. So as part of what we've been looking at is the current design guidelines in the SPA are not extremely clear on height. They talk about stories. There's no, you can have 90 feet in height. It literally is by stories. And then the stories are not clearly defined. It implies certain things in certain areas that you could have up to 10 feet per story. You can have a higher story for the commercial areas. Doesn't include roof pitches. There's really no clear definitions of that. So one of the objectives is to clearly define what that is, so there's a very clear expectation of what that height will be. In a previous application that went through not long ago, the RC-22 lift parcel, given some input from an adjacent neighbor, what they felt comfortable with and what really made them feel like they had more predictability was actually setting a maximum elevation, so from sea level. So for that particular building, I'm just throwing out this number, the maximum elevation for RC-22 and within their stories was also the maximum height by elevation of 6998, 6,990 feet above sea level. So moving forward with this master plan, the applicants are proposing to now establish maximum elevations. So it's very clear, it's very predictable, and what you do within that elevation, you know, if you were originally allowed five stories and you only want to do four, but maintain that elevation and have higher levels per story, higher floor levels, then by all means, as long as you don't exceed that maximum elevation. This has created some controversy with neighbors, or some concerns, I should say, with neighbors for some of these infill parcels, specifically the RC-17 and 18 parcel, which would be directly behind the Westgate and near the Sundial Lodge. What their concern is, they feel like that this is going to be substantially increasing the height of that building. The reality is, based on what's existing there now, existing conditions, that will increase in some areas. It will certainly increase the height slightly, but in most areas, it actually would be the same as what it would be based on the existing the story's definition. So there has been some concern with that. We are going to continue to flesh that out with the Planning Commission. I really get some input and have a better understanding of how these elevations were established and where it really would fall within, whether it was defined as a story or maximum elevation, and what those real substantial changes are. But certainly they are requesting some changes to that height, some buildings being higher, some buildings, in fact, the majority of the buildings actually being lower than if they were utilizing that same number of stories rather than elevation.
Right. So it's the expectations by the adjacent property owners. I mean, they bought their property based on what they saw to be developed, and now that's changing. I mean, how do you deal with that?
Well, that's the Planning Commission would need to balance that, looking at the overall master plan and see if this is a reasonable request to do that. This, again, the majority of the buildings that they're looking at building and density going away, they're actually looking to reduce the overall density and height. In this particular case, there may be some small increase in that. And another one, obviously a substantial increase. So they really need to balance that to see, trying to make sure that there's no harm done, but obviously considering the inputs of the neighbors and really what harm is being done, if any, and how we can mitigate that as much as possible.
All right. There's a proposed change to High Mountain Road. Is this the road that then goes to the Red Pine Lodge where that future development will go?
It is, yes. So this is an existing road now. It currently is built up to the end of the new Apex development and Vintage on the Strand. That's where the road currently ends. That road, a portion of that road is looking to be realigned so that it would access between the Westgate and the new RC-17-18 development site. creating more of a commercial roadway through there. So a small portion of it being realigned, not the entire thing, just that corridor through those particular buildings, and then connecting back into the existing High Mountain Road as it curves up to the Apex development and then eventually onto the Red Pine development.
Right. So is this kind of like the Deercrest Road we have here in Park City, where it's gated and only people who have a unit at Deercrest are allowed up there?
No, there will be no gated areas here. It is anticipated that the majority of the development, you know, up beyond, we don't want everybody driving up there. So it has been anticipated that it would not be certainly a public roadway that would go up there, but certainly not a gated area by any means. And it would just be relocating that small portion to really try to increase the accessibility to the resort core, to increase the viability of hopefully the retail and restaurants will be developing along that area on the west side of the Westgate and on the east side of the new RC 1718 parcels.
Okay. I'm going to leave it at that. Real quick, though, there is a proposed amendment for 11 lots at Aspen Creek Crossing subdivision. No staff report here. Tiffany, can you give us an idea of what's happening here, where this is? It's just a disagreement among lot owners?
Well, actually, this is an interesting one. This is a development that was approved many years ago within the Canyon Spa. It's called the Aspen Creek Crossing Development. We actually have had one public hearing regarding this proposal, and we're just going back with hopefully some solid options for the Planning Commission so they can move the application along with some sort of a recommendation to the County Council. So this development was originally approved as a hotel lodging development, and over the years it was eventually modified in the Land Use and Zoning Chart to become single family. The struggle has been how their square footage has been calculated, and that's what we really need a clarification on with the Land Use and Zoning Chart. All other single family developments within the canyons, all square footage is calculated as part of their maximum. That includes the garage, basement areas, and so on and so forth. That is slightly different than hotel accommodation or even multifamily, which does exempt out some of the square footage below grade or even a specific amount of, I believe it's 600 square feet of a garage. So unfortunately, in years past, that has been interpreted differently based on some memorandums to a file, you know, back in 2005, that did exempt out some of that basement square footage and also some of the garage square footage. Unfortunately, that was never officially modified, so the only thing we can really apply at this point is the maximum square footage for a single-family dwelling, including everything. So they're really looking to get a clarification on what that language really is or what would really apply to this Aspen Creek Crossing subdivision. And they're requesting to have those lower basement levels exempted out as a portion and a portion of the garage as well.
Okay. Hey, Tiffany, thanks for your time. Sean, let's turn to you. A public hearing will be held on the County Resource Management Plan. That's required by state law. It's a plan that covers 28 items, everything from mining and agriculture to air, water, historical resources, and a lot more. So is this just basically boilerplate language here, or are there directives unique to Summit County?
We've tried to make this unique to Summit County and really use this to our advantage to help bolster our relationship. One of the things that's unique to this plan, as required by state law, is it only takes into account how we manage these resources on federal land. So this is Forest Service land, BLM land, and we've taken this opportunity to work with our friends in the federal government to say, we think you're doing a good job. Here's some ideas on how we think we can make our lands better and the management of those lands, and here's some ideas on how we think we can help each other in the management of these areas.
All right. So in particular, what does this say about wildlife? Since in recent days we've had a cougar in Park City, we've had a couple of moose on Main Street, and then an elk herd spotted on Quarry Mountain.
So for wildlife, it's all about balancing the needs for the recreationalists, those who are out hunting, those who are want to go see wildlife out there, and those how the state manages and the feds manages those herds. It's a delicate balancing act. You have to keep the population of the animals at a certain level to keep them healthy. But there's recreationalists that want to be able to hunt for sport. And then there's people who want to go into the wilderness to see these in their natural habitats. So Our state and federal managers do a great job. I don't have the specific language right here in front of me as to what that, but we're really not requesting any major changes other than that we keep the herd levels at an appropriate level to manage the expectations of all users.
So when does this have to be approved?
So there's two steps to this. There's the Planning Commission step, which we're in now. We've presented this to both the Eastern Summit County Planning Commission and the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission as a work session a few weeks ago. We're looking for both planning commissions to make a recommendation to the county council. Now, we're not adopting an Eastern Resource Management Plan and a Basin Resource Management Plan. This is an entire Summit County Resource Management Plan, and the state requires that we have this done before August 1st. So we're looking to get this through the Planning Commission fairly quickly and then get it up to the county council, our elected officials, so they can have some time to review it and go through it and do some wordsmithing at the county level.
Okay. Hey, Sean, appreciate your time this morning. Well, Leadership Class 23 has decided on a class project. In the studio with details, I have class members Ryan Walsh, Sarah Jo Dickens, and Colleen McGinn. Good morning to all of you.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
So the project is to save Bonanza Flat. How did you guys decide on that?
Go ahead, Sarah and Joe. Would you like to?
Well, you know, I think it came out of just being inspired by the community's response to save Bonanza Flat with the city and with the local coalition.
Okay. It was one of how many projects that you chose from?
I believe we had six projects that we were deciding between, and it was definitely a heated race, but the Bonanza Flat came on top at the end, and I think everyone rallied together to support this cause.
Okay, so the shortest project ever since the property closes June 15th. What happens once June 15th happens? I mean, your work is over, or?
You know, I have a feeling that there's going to be follow-on work once that date comes and goes. And, you know, the purpose of the project is for us to learn something about ourselves and also do something good for the community. So in spite of the short time frame or the short deadline, this is still of value to the community and to us as a class.
Okay. So what is it that you're going to do, Sarah Jo, to save Bonanza Flat?
Well, right now we're collecting items from mostly the outdoor industry and holding an online auction. So that's going to start on May 12th and run through the 26th. So everyone can go on, check out some really cool items from anything from, hopefully, skis to haircuts. But bidding on that, the money goes directly towards Bonanza Flat when we're done.
All right. Do you guys have a goal, Colleen, to raise? Or
We don't have a goal. It's mostly to raise awareness as well. With the auction website, which is really cool about it, is that it's a community effort. You have the people from Park City Leadership hosting this auction, and then we're getting a bunch of vendors from people in Park City who want to participate to be able to help something that's important to Park City and the community. So it has many layers to it, which makes it very fun and exciting for us.
Okay. And do you have any kind of matching grants or anything out there, or is it just strictly stuff?
One of the reasons we decided to facilitate this auction is in part because we could go to businesses and ask them for donations. And there are times when companies want to help, but cash is not readily available for them. But sometimes products or services are. So that's the reason that this became one of the things that we're going to pursue. We are also soliciting individual corporations and will be probably individually asking our close networks for donations. But as of yet, we don't have any specific challenge grants.
Yeah. So how's the workload then been divided? I mean, you guys have, what, 30 people or so in the class?
Yeah, 32 people. Everybody's pretty much jumped in and taking at least one part on. The asks for donations right now is our biggest challenge. And so I think that everybody's really excited and on board. There's certainly a few other people in the group that are maybe leading the charge, but that switches as needs progress.
Mm-hmm. So where are we going to find the online auction? What's the website going to be? Or is it just done but through Bidding for Good? Or?
It is. Mm-hmm. Bidding for Good, Save Bonanza Flat.
Okay. All right. What else do you guys want to tell me? Can we talk a little bit about the sticky problem that you guys have of not knowing the future use? I mean, we're out raising, trying to raise money, and we've got people donating with certain expectations, you know, that the property will be open or that there will be no hunting. And we have others saying that we should have hunting and snowmobile use. So
you hit on something that became a pretty apparent sort of a black box or a question mark for our group immediately after we decided to pursue this project. We had kind of a quick education by some of the folks in the group who knew that those questions existed. And what we really know is that there is an opportunity to prevent high-end development in a space that you can't reverse once it passes. So in spite of the fact that there are a lot of open questions and that we have cross-county issues and services and there will be some kind of development, maybe trailheads or some kind of infrastructure, in spite of those questions, we knew that this was still a worthwhile project for us to pursue and something that's great for the community.
Okay. Well, we'll see, June 15th?
That's right.
All right. And the auction starts May 12th, and it'll run for, sounds like, a couple of weeks after that.
Yes.
How many items do you think you'll have?
With 32 people, let's hope we at least get 60, right?
I see. Is that the idea? Two per person, huh?
Well, I think we said one, but come on, guys. Get out there.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
Yeah, actually, there is a challenge grant going on right now with City Council. We have one more day to go, and we're a couple thousand dollars away. So get out. Give Summit Land Conservancy a call or get online and donate today and make that. I think it was $25,000.
Yeah, and it's probably worth noting that the leadership class of 23 is certainly not leading this charge. We decided that our project would be in support of the coalition of outdoor and open space nonprofits that were already coalesced and meeting and had things to do to the end of saving this parcel of land, and the class of 23 is just working in support of that goal.
Okay, well, good luck to you guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's 8:40. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher with the Park City Board of Education meeting tomorrow. In the studio with a preview, I have the superintendent of schools, Amber Conley. Good morning, Amber.
Morning, Leslie.
First, just wanted to mention spring break. The district, I know, had hoped to try and arrange with other entities things for kids who were still in town to keep engaged and busy. I mean, I know that we had films at the film series every afternoon. Anything else that the district did?
I know Basin Rec offered their discounted activities. The city and the county have just been tremendous in helping us provide more opportunities for our students that are not out of town and activities that are very low cost.
Yeah, and of course, then we announced this morning about Rob Katz's and family's donation to get this Communities of Caring off the ground.
Right. So $250,000 for youth prevention efforts related specifically to the mental health and substance abuse that we've seen in our city, in our county, and also with our neighboring school district. So we are so incredibly grateful for their donation and looking forward to the work ahead of us.
All right. So will that embrace all of Summit County schools?
It does. So we have had several meetings with both Summit, South Summit, North Summit superintendents, and working with Park City Community Foundation, of course, with that entire community health group. And we're seeing similar things. North Summit, just because of their population, is a little bit different, but we're continuing to see a rise in mental health and substance abuse issues.
All right. Closed session, of course. I know you can't talk much, but we're continuing the strategy session with negotiations. How are those going?
Fantastic. You know, we started with the interest-based negotiation training, and we've continued to move right along, meeting all of our timelines. And we do hope to have all of the negotiations finished by the middle of May.
Great. Also, a vote on the upcoming school calendar. Well, actually, I should say the 2018-19 school calendar. It looks like very familiar to what we do anyway. No changes there?
Not really any major changes. We are trying to get out a little bit earlier so we can have our staff engage in the state professional development. So we have shortened, I believe, the winter holiday just a little bit by a couple days in order to get out earlier.
Okay. You'll be providing an update with regard to grade realignment. We're pushing this back again further.
Right. You know, when we look at the needs of our students and making sure that we minimize the impact of our students as we get our facilities built, it became very evident that displacing 400 students for the high school and having them in modulars really wasn't the best thing to do for their education. So it will be my recommendation to wait until all of our facilities are finished. And given the timeline that we're on, best case scenario, it would be August 2019.
Okay. And what we'll see happen between now and then is the expansion of the high school, option 3A, along with a new 5-6 school, which has location to be determined.
Right. We've been meeting with our 5-6 team. We're going to Odyssey Elementary in North Salt Lake this Wednesday to a site visit, taking the entire team there, or those members that can go. And we're on schedule for that. It's, again, a very comprehensive process. We're taking our time, making sure that we find the right site and the right type of building to maximize our students' learning.
What's so special about this Odyssey school?
You know, Odyssey has done some really unique design around collaboration and flexible walls and flexible spaces. And we're going in to actually see how the students and the teachers interact with one another. I've been there before. It's really an engaging environment. It's a place that you want to be inside and engaged.
First year I went to eighth grade, I was moved to a new middle school like that, and that's exactly what they had done. They came in later and put up real walls. I don't know. You know, maybe 40 years later it's different, but...
Yeah, you know, right now, and I'm going to say, and you hear me say this a lot, education is changing at such a rapid pace. And the way our students think and interact, I think you see it in our schools with dual language, with our art projects, how it's really interdisciplinary, and our dance instructor. And so the more flexibility that we can provide for our students, that's the preparation for their college and careers.
So I think the preferred location is at Ecker, right?
You know, I'm not for certain on that. I think Bear Hollow offers some really unique opportunities. As you know, there is a wetland there, and there's some really neat possibilities for doing some science exploratory, even partnering with Swanner. But Ecker, of course, offers that vertical alignment with our teachers to be able to team more. And that really has been the recommendation of that 5-8 curriculum team.
All right. So when do you choose a location?
You know, I'm relying on our architects and our contractors a lot, and also with the team and doing the pros and cons. And of course, that's going to be the board's final decision. So we'll be able to offer them some options.
All right. And then any construction this year? The summer?
Yeah, the only thing we have is we have some modulars coming in. As you know, we have some space constraints, one being at McPolin, so we will have a modular at McPolin. And then also at Treasure Mountain, we have our elective classes are big, and we don't have any space for them, so we're going to have some modulars here on Kern's campus.
All right. You'll be introducing your recommended budget for the coming school year. Just basically looking at new positions, how many? It looked like maybe 11?
Right. So I'll give you some context. The board asked administration to present to them what we needed to truly provide intervention for mental health and wellness, and also, of course, to reduce our academic achievement gap. And so the plan that you see, it has a huge focus on intervention and enrichment. It's a growth of our district learning plan. So as you know, 4 years ago, we did a comprehensive needs assessment. We developed our operational plan, really focusing on our curriculum, instruction, and assessment. And now it's time to really look at that intervention piece. So looking at, again, counseling, additional training for counseling, all of our teachers, some school psychologists. As you know, we had our special education review, and in looking at our numbers, it's been really interesting. We've pulled the numbers of staff from 2004 all the way to 2016, and in 2004 we had two psychologists, and right now we have 0.5. So that just shows you that we have not been able to meet the needs of those areas. Also, those are really high demand positions across the nation. And so to get school psychologists is very difficult.
Yeah. So when we talk about 11 new staff members, I mean, we're talking about $1 million, right? Given salary and benefits and such. Where does that money come from?
Actually, I'm going to make your eyes roll back a little more. It's actually, if you look at the full budget request that we've put together, it's about $4 million.
For just the 11 positions?
No, for all of the positions that we're asking. And that, again,
is... Oh, so the 11 is just for the mental health aspect and...
Correct.
And achievement gap.
Right. So if you look at that budget narrative, and I would really encourage everyone to click on that, it's about 24 pages. And what it does is it has the narratives of why we're asking what we're asking. It has the research in there as well as details. It also then correlates back over into a spreadsheet. So to answer your question, where does that money come from? Mr. Hobbs put together basically a spreadsheet of our revenues and our expenses of what we have currently. As you know, we don't have $4 million to cover that. We right now have about, I'm going to say about $300,000 extra based on taxes, tax projections, and new growth. So that other funds would either have to, A, come from our rainy day fund as a one-time funding source, which we have, or come from a tax increase. And so the board, again, I'm following the directive of the board, asked me to put together what is your ideal plan to be able to address the needs of our students, and that's what we've done.
Yeah. Do you dare, though, propose a tax increase given that you've got a bond election just around the corner?
You know, I think that's a valid question and a discussion that we're going to have with our community, and then also with the expectations that our community has with the education system. I mean, it's very much a shared responsibility with our education system, and there are high expectations to be able to provide these things.
All right, and then you'll also be giving an update with regard to moving the start time. So when are we talking about doing that? Should we just wait for grade realignment?
Well, you know, that... There's a lot of support for that, to wait until grade realignment, but there's also a lot of support to be able to address the sleep and the mental health of our adolescent students sooner rather than later. So we're getting all of the information to the board, and we'll be presenting that to them. I would say the things that we're presenting for this meeting in particular is looking at our before and after school care, because if we change our times, we're either going to have to provide some type of before school care, And it does change our after-school care. So we've put together some numbers and how that would impact our families. The other thing we've looked at is moving our high school an hour. How will that impact missed class time with our athletics, because getting out and traveling? And then the final thing is looking at our what we call the minimum school program. We're required to have 990 hours and 180 days. And so there's schools that have more minutes than others. So we're looking at some flexibility there.
Okay, Ember, I need to leave it there. Thanks for your time this morning. Again,
thanks, Leslie.
The Park City Board of Education is meeting tomorrow starting at 4 o'clock at the school, or 3 o'clock, excuse me, at the school district offices. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, coming up this Saturday, Earth Day, April 22nd, it's the March for Science Park City. In the studio with details, I have the lead organizer of the event and KPCW DJ, Josh Hobson. Good morning, Josh.
Good morning, Leslie. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, glad to see you. So what is the March for Science?
Well, we are one of over 500 satellite marches of the national movement, the big main marches on D.C. The overall theme is climate change for the national march, and absolutely we are touching on that as well. But, you know, we really wanted to make, you know, each local march is kind of personalized to the locality, and we really wanted to emphasize kind of the local science that's going on, how it impacts our community, and why it's important. You know, why we should bother to get out of beds on a beautiful Saturday morning where we don't have to be anywhere and come, you know, come march, because both shows support for the scientific community and, you know, lets our elected officials know that yes, these are issues that matter to us.
So you say it's one of 500 in the country and one of about 5 in Utah, huh?
That's correct.
Yeah.
And in fact, the way the timing worked out, Salt Lake City's march will not begin until 3 p.m. because the Salt Lake Marathon in the morning. So it actually, the timing works out perfectly that you could attend ours and then go straight down to Salt Lake's and, you know, go march to the Capitol too.
Okay. So this is happening Saturday. When and where?
Okay. Well, the main march will start at 9 a.m. at the Brew Pub lot at the top of Main Street. We're going to march down Main, cross back over to Sweet Alley at the Bear Bench, and then back up to the Brew Pub lot. At that point, we'll have a small rally there with a couple of speakers. I have Nan Worrell is going to give a presentation about Park City's, how Park City Municipal is looking at sustainability. And then Scotty Sultronic is coming with the Solar Saucer. It's this essentially a solar-powered sound stage. And that's really cool. And he's just a very energetic kind of speaker. And then after that, we're actually going to move to the Sandy Auditorium, where we've called it our Bursts of Genius. We have a presentation of six speakers, five of whom are really top scientists in Utah. The other one is Dr. Catherine Coles, the former Utah Poet Laureate, who just spent a year in Antarctica on research stations. So while she is a poet, she is absolutely connected to the science world and has really kind of meaningful, insightful things of how to bring science to people.
Right. So how did you round up these impressive rundown?
Part of it is just the group of organizers that I have with me are just very dedicated and rather well-connected people. So, Ginger Tolman, who's really been helping put together the speaker list with me, and I went down to the Science Computing and Imaging Institute down at the university and talked with Chris Johnson, who's going to be one of our main speakers and the director there, and said, these are who we were looking for. And Chris said, well, I know this person and this person would be perfect. And then I did have one of our other organizers, Dan Syroyd, got Dr. Brian Mensch from Utah State, rather, who's really one of the lead climatologists in the state because, you know, like I said, it is climate change is part of the discussion, and we wanted to make sure that we had the most knowledgeable people we could, discuss it.
Okay. So that happens starting at 11:30, and it'll run till when? People are talking for what, 15, 20 minutes?
Yeah, it's 15 minutes each. And we are actually going to be bringing sandwiches from Backdoor Deli in just to really try to get people in the middle of the day on a Saturday to, actually go from the march to the speaker event. It will be 15 minutes each, and then there will be an opportunity to kind of interact with the scientists at the end. We thought that would be easier than an individual Q&A, just in trying to keep, the time, right. And, we are aware that people's attention spans aren't the longest necessarily. And, so we didn't want somebody droning on for 3 hours. But at the same time, this is all important information. So, we are really trying to keep our speakers to 15 minutes. But
yeah. So, given that we've been talking about saving our snow here in Park City for more than a dozen years here, are we just preaching to the choir?
A little bit. And one of the questions I've been asked in the last week is, how are we making this a nonpartisan event? We did actually a few weeks ago reach out to Spencer Cox and see if the lieutenant governor would be our MC. He had a scheduling conflict at the time. But, science is not partisan. And while certainly, I have an agenda, I will admit, I think clean water is a good idea. I think breathable air is probably good for all of us. You can certainly read a political lean into the message, but really it's about presenting the science. And, part of the message we're trying to get across is, especially to our elected officials, that policy needs to be based on verifiable research data. And, there's plenty of that already at the present that's really just kind of being ignored, and we have an administration that looks like it's increasingly turning its back on that. So while this is specifically not an anti-Trump rally, it is a pro-science rally, we're kind of in parallel lanes, really very much, I personally, the science that I'm going to, or the sign I am going to bring to the march with me is science will get us to Mars, because it's pro-science. This is what's leading us forward. The technological innovations that have occurred because of both research that's happening in our universities and research that's been funded by the government over the last few decades. We would not have gotten to the moon if not for Republicans in the 50s really funding NASA. So where's that support now? That's what we're looking for.
All right. Ride your bike. Take the bus.